LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Beyond politics, poverty, and war. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host Greg Moffat, and my guests today are Courtney Brown and Princess Jeannette, who join us to discuss remote viewing and the Farsight Institute's recent project, Martin Luther King Jr., The Dream, The Man, The Death. During the first half of the show, we talk about remote viewing and psychic phenomena in general, the mind-matter interface, and emerging awareness of the interconnectedness and interdependence which shapes reality, and which is set to scrap our sometimes outdated scientific paradigms. Such a shift has the power to revolutionise human affairs, human potential, and the very course of evolution on Earth. It is nothing less than the redirection of an entire civilization. Later, we turn to the Martin Luther King RV project and other high-profile assassinations and conspiracies. Many people suspect that some of the momentous events of history, which subsequently shaped society, were not all that they at first appeared to be. The assassination of Martin Luther King is just one case which, like the killing of US President John F. Kennedy and the fateful events of 9/11, represented an atavistic consciousness of manipulation and control which for millennia has sought the subjugation of humanity through fear. This consciousness and our own, however, are one and the same. Our quest, therefore, is to confront our own shadow and bring it into the light. Remote viewing offers one way to dispel this darkness. Hello and welcome, Courtney, and thank you so much for joining us today once again on LegalizeFreedom.com. And for the very first time, hello and welcome, Princess, and thank you for joining us today on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Hi, thank you.
And it's my pleasure also, Greg, to be here. So you're always a great host, so thanks for inviting me back.
Now, Princess is here today because she has been at the helm of the latest Farsight Institute remote viewing project, which is entitled Martin Luther King Jr., The Dream, The Man, The Death, which is our subject for today. Before we get started in all of that, Princess, why not just tell listeners just a little bit about yourself, whatever you want to share, because you've been part of the Farsight's Young Masters remote viewing program for some time, and just tell us about that and what your interest in remote viewing, where that came from, why you wanted to learn.
Okay, yes. Actually, when Courtney approached me with it, I was very intrigued. I was slightly confused at first, but when I finally saw Dick and Daz and what they were doing, I ran straight to them. And Courtney was like, if you like it, come back. If you don't like it, well, we'll, okay. And I literally called them and was like, I'm definitely interested. I've only watched half the video, but I want to learn how to do something like that. I felt it was something that I was supposed to be doing. It was something that I could be good at and not be judged. It was something that could show who I really was and or who I really am. And it was very amazing. That's kind of how it started. And in the beginning, I was a little nervous. I was, even though I'm an actress, so I'm great in front of a camera. I'm used to being in front of a camera. I was nervous about this because I never spoke. You know, there's no script. It's all happening right then. And so I'm literally telling people who aren't in front of me what I'm seeing, and it was very different at first, but now I'm super excited every day when I get to do a project, every day when I'm like, what's the next thing to do? And I get to really do something important, not just for myself or Farsight, but for the people, for everybody in the world. It's everything that we do here is extremely important to all of us. And, it, you know, it's just the end to the unknowing. It delivers things that all of us have always wanted to know or didn't understand or that we're curious about in the world that, you know, government doesn't necessarily tell us or conspiracy theories that everyone says. And it tells the truth. And I think that is amazing. It's tremendously exciting to me.
Yeah, I think Courtney used the phrase, or certainly words that Courtney used, boiled down to the essence of no more secrets, which is really the promise of remote viewing. And when I say no more secrets, I don't, of course, mean where we have to go into lead-lined rooms in order to hide our thoughts from people, but just that the world that is veiled from our eyes, as you say, where so many nefarious things go on, that would all become no longer possible. You know, human realm would change necessarily once remote viewing becomes established. How, Princess, were you, how open were you in your life before this to ideas about the non-material realm and, you know, and matter and, you know, interacting with mind and just that whole area, which is really where remote viewing is situated?
I was very open. I've always had an open mind. I always wanted to know more about everything that went on and everything that is and everything that was. And so it's, you know, I've always been very attuned myself, and I knew that I'm more than a body. I knew I've always been comfortable with spirits and the conscious mind and, you know, who we really and truly are besides the person that's sitting here. So it wasn't entirely new. It was more so understanding it, getting that full grasp. It's like we know how to read, but now when we go to first grade, we learn how to comprehend what we read. And that's kind of how it was for me. It was very enlightening to my openness.
I think so much of this, you've hit upon it there, really. So much of this, when I say this, I mean, including remote viewing here, almost can't nail it down other than to say this. When we come to this knowing, we realize that we've known it all along, that it's, you know, it's part of who we are. You know, we are not our bodies, or at least we are not only our bodies. And, it's that moment, that realization, that dawning, when, like, of course, you know, this is what, it's almost like we're rediscovering something that we've lost. I mean, for your part, Courtney, how did you and Princess find each other, and how have you found in general the Young Masters program? Because I know in the past you've spoken about, I don't think it's putting too big a word on it to say concern about the future of remote viewing, because you know, you understand it's very important. Yeah. This is something going forward that young people do come into.
Okay, well, there's a couple elements that sort of intervened here. We did a TV pilot for a TV show for a major network 2.5 years ago. And there were two things that sort of really impacted it. First was that it got all the way up to the head of the entire network. It was a big network. And all the producers, executive producers, associate producers, everybody, editors, everybody, they were all like gung-ho. And the head of the network said, this is a little unsettling for him. So he thought it was just a little bit too, like the planet might not be ready for it, that type of a thing. But then there was another element that came across that was not directly spoken sometimes, but it was very clear that we were essentially Dick Elgar, Des Smith, and Courtney Brown. And although they didn't say it exactly like this, it came across, we can't sell a show with three old white guys. And the basic thing is, like, if you look at the Comedy Central show, the Daily Show on the Comedy Central channel, Jon Stewart retired, and then they replaced him with Trevor Noah, a black South African. So they don't do things like that unless they're, you know, they're closely tied into not only what the current state of the world is, but the market and who the audience is. They knew that they had to reach out to the younger generation, and the younger generation wasn't all white. So it's a multiracial, multi-ethnic, multi everything across boundaries and international world right now. And everything is being pitched in that direction. The old Ozzie and Harriet days are gone. And so I looked at Dick and Daz after that experience and I said, hey, you guys may be the best remote viewers on the planet Earth, but we have to branch out. So I'm also an artist, and I went to art venues every week, a couple times a week, to draw and do photography with models and so on. And I saw Princess. She was a model at one of the art venues, and she was just absolutely vivacious, so much energy bubbling off of the stage, and all the photographers, she had on this gorgeous gown, and it was just like, I looked at my other artist friend, and I said, boy, that one, the first thing I said is, you know, with so many photographers and audience sort of zooming about, I said, that woman wouldn't even give us the time of day. I mean, she's probably going to be on Hollywood the next week. And so, but I did eventually get to speak with her and tell her about what I did and what this Farsight stuff was. And I said to myself, if that woman, that very young woman, knew remote viewing, she could help me change the planet. Actually, not me, but help us, help everybody. She could, because that's what people want to see. They want to see someone like her do it because they can relate to her. Like we just had a conversation the other day about whether she wants to dye her hair blue. And she said, would that be okay with Farsight? And I said, look, you just have to be yourself. It's your age. People in your age do things like that. They just dye their hair blue. So just be yourself. And so it's that type of thing. We have to reach out to an audience that's across. The young are going to inherit the earth, Greg, whether we want it or not. It's going to happen. And so people have to, and the young people, I'm a professor at a major university. People don't like to be lectured to by old people. They want young people to know what's going on. And so I made a decision then. I said, I will try to seek out the people that I'd like to have that I think would be the most captivating if they did remote viewing and ask them if they wanted to do training and then train them and see what happens. So that's how Princess got into this. However, her training now has eclipsed over 400 hours, which is more than anyone I ever know in the whole history of remote viewing. One-on-one training. She's at the level of Dick Elgar and Daz Smith and the level of what I call scary good. And she's featured in this Martin Luther King project, but she's also coming out in a month, actually in sometime late this month, in a new redo of a project, which is our old Atlantis project. We're redoing it because that was a project where we had very little live remote viewing and on video. And so we really wanted to redo that one. So without her knowing anything about it, we slipped her those targets. And she did those, and those are in the can now, and we're working on the project for it now. So that's going to come out, later in a few weeks. And that is unbelievable. So when you see the Martin Luther King, and we're releasing that one for free on YouTube. So when you see the Martin Luther King one, and you see what she does, and then you see her remote viewing with, on video, with Dick Elgar, because Dick Elgar also did a session on video, you get to see where, you know, the response normally is, whoa, where did this one come from? And you say, and she's young, and she's gorgeous, and she's African-American, she's not white. And it's like, what planet did this person drop out of? I mean, but it changes the game, just like with the Comedy Central station with the Daily Show. It changes the game. Like, for example, when Jon Stewart retired, there was an immediate drop in the audience for the Daily Show. But there was a uptick in the international audience and a huge uptick in the young person's audience that was watching the Comedy Central, the Daily Show. So, you know, that's, if we don't let young people, and mind you, this is very important, remote viewing or anything related to this, extraterrestrial life, remote viewing, psi phenomena in general, is basically prohibited to be spoken of on universities. So, fortunately, at my university, I teach mostly math and statistics courses, so I don't have to deal with that issue. But worldwide, you can't get the subject. It's not only not mainstream, but it's not even allowed to be taught at the university level. And so what we have now is a situation where we get a young person able to speak to young people in venues, in realms that was that they're otherwise eclipsed out of. They're prohibited from getting. So, you know, I'm sorry, but I, myself, Dick and Daz are just not the person. We're not the people to do this. You need someone like Princess. And so that's where her role is. And fortunately, we are now after basically 10 months of intensive training, which is honestly a huge amount. We're at the level where she can see the light of day. So that's where we are right now. And that's the history of how that happened.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, really, because we have to work with what we have, where we are, in the sense of perceptions, as you say, popular perceptions in the media, what comes across well. And of course, there's something in me, and certainly there'll be within you as well, Courtney and Princess, you'll probably understand this. If you've been around the block a few times, let's put it that way, like Courtney and I have, that you resist the infantilization or the trivialization of media, and you don't want everything to be glossy and shiny. You want real rock and roll. You don't want the X Factor, but it's not like every great rock and roll star looked like the heel of a boot, if you see what I mean. You can have beauty and brains and what have you, and it's kind of reaching that balance. And I think we've seen this trend. I don't even want to use the word trend. That in itself has negative connotations, but we've seen this development over the last few decades in science, but also in what the mainstream like to call the fringe science, Courtney, that we're interested in, where different personalities have started to come through and they've begun to understand the media. And there's never been more media than there is now. And it's never been more global 24/7 than it is now. And I don't think there is a issue with addressing your audience in a way that they can understand and accept, as long as your message, your material, your worldview remains intact. It's literally like saying, I'm going to go to my friend's wedding, so normally I wear jeans and a t-shirt, maybe I'll wear a suit for the wedding. It's not like you're compromising your fundamental principles by doing that. It's just you're thinking about the context that you're operating in. And I think this is very important. I think of, for example, the popular face of astronomy, one of my favourite subjects in the UK when I was growing up was Sir Patrick Moore, a massively overweight old academic going horribly thin on top, wearing a monocle and speaking like this, the voice of the English university. And now you've got a young, good-looking guy called Brian Cox who presents the popular astronomy programs and popular science programs on the TV. And suddenly you've got people in bars and in the streets and in the stores talking about popular science, So I just think it's working with what you've got, where you are, and it's to some extent, it's playing the system in its own game in a positive way.
Yeah, it seems to, and I know because I am of a younger generation, trends, as you said, or whatnot, people try to follow versus being able to learn from things, they'll judge it or they'll stop it. Or, and Courtney, I was just talking about this today, something similar, as in how beauty brings in certain things. But while you did say the average rock star isn't necessarily the most beautiful box of chocolate or the most beautiful flower that you've seen. And sometimes it's not necessarily all about that. It's about what grasps the audience. And while I slightly disagree with Courtney, I think that Courtney could bring in a very good audience without me. But I think there's a reason that I'm here that both of us probably don't even know yet. And in finding all this out is crazy, but he does have a point, and you do as well, whereas with certain TV shows or certain demographic, whatever each demographic that you want to speak to, you have to appeal a certain way to get their attention first before they'll even listen, before they'll even try or do. And like you both said, the world is going to change, and it has to change, and we have to adapt to it, to the new things that are happening.
You know, I might also add, Greg, that the stakes couldn't be higher right now. This is not the time to argue who would be the best front man for a rock band, because the stakes couldn't be higher. We're at the verge of our own evolution as a species, where this planet's going to die off, or we're going to either be dead as a species,
mm-hmm.
or we're going to survive and thrive. And the stakes are beyond high. And so what we have to do, the two major things that our civilization has to bridge, is first the scientific realization and understanding that we are composite beings, physical and non-physical, and that the non-physical is the big deal, and that we're not just physical beings that work with logic and emotions, that there's another side to us that extends much, but you know, because remote viewing would not be possible without that other side, the mm-hmm. non-physical side, which is literally extending throughout the universe. So this other side of us really has to become front and center of all of every subject that's discussed in university levels or everywhere. And it's prohibited in mainstream science to even mention that as real. And then the other thing is the issue of extraterrestrial life, where we think of ourselves as being the center of the universe, and that the entire universe exists without life. We're the only thing, it's the only planet with life. We haven't even acknowledged the probability of microbial life elsewhere, when in fact the evidence is overwhelming that there was a huge civilization on Mars at one point. It was vibrant. It was a loved planet. It had lots of life on it. And all the evidence is there, and NASA stomps on that as hard as they possibly can be, because the issue to discuss that is political. It's not scientific. And the political decision hasn't been made to do that. Now we're in a very crucial year, where in 2016, lots is happening. Economies all over the world have huge bubbles. And we have, in the United States, at least, an electorate that simply doesn't believe its leadership anymore. You can see that happening in the mainstream election that's going on right now for presidency. Huge portions of each party simply are walking away from sort of the doublespeak that normal politicians have used since the beginning of time. And they're just not taking it and not believing it. And so we're in a situation where we're very vulnerable to what we might call disruptors, or people. And I don't mean disruptors in a bad sense, but like disruptors are, it's an economic term for companies typically that come in and do stuff under completely new sets of rules, just completely disregarding the way things were done before. Amazon, Uber, Netflix, those are classic examples of disruptors. And so now on our political side, both on the Democratic and Republican side, you have disruptor candidates that are doing extremely well. And so that tells you about the populace. It doesn't tell you much about the candidates, but it tells you a lot about the populace. So we have a populace that's very volatile right now. It's not believing the old ways of doing things. They're ready to throw the entire thing out, baby and the bathwater. And so the populace is really ready for change. In fact, the populace is demanding change, but it doesn't actually know what kind of change. So what we're dealing with for remote viewing, it's not just the findings that we're having, the findings about what really happened to JFK, what really happened to Martin Luther King, what really happened with 9/11, what really happened with extraterrestrial phenomena. It's not just those findings, but our institute, for example, which is the leading, actually only venue where these types of topics with full-blown public projects using remote viewing under strictly controlled scientific conditions, all recorded live on video so people can see it with their own eyes. This type of thing the public is ready for. I mean, it is super ready for it. And the type of change you're talking about is huge. And it seems to be that this is a year that's very pregnant. This is a year that's very pregnant for change. This is a year where that type of thing has an audience that's ready for it. And we also have a year where the economy and the politics is also very volatile. So this 2016 looks like it's going to be, the next 8 months is going to be really interesting. And so this is the optimal time to have people like yourself ask about the projects, such as even the current one with Martin Luther King. That, what actually happened to him needs to come out.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't come out, and we've already gone through the, we have a show on the JFK one. You interviewed me on JFK, and on 9/11 and all so many other stuff. But, you know, the story just doesn't end. All these things that have happened, all these secrets that are covering up things that were tragedies that should never have happened, that were done and then public lied to, all that has to come to an end. The whole thing has to come to an end so that people can believe in the future again. And so, you know, and with the fact, the blunt fact that it was old people, leaders, who lied to the younger generation, and it's now the younger generation that are rejecting the older leaders, we have to have younger people that are in from the ground that younger people will listen to. I mean, look at Bernie Sanders, for example, on the political side, on the Democratic side. He's very old, but he's talking in a way that resonates with young people. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that the young, that shows you that the young people want a new voice of some type. And I'm not supporting Bernie Sanders, endorsing him or saying anything like that. I'm just looking at how that type of thing is happening. So anyway, that's, Princess is not the first young person we will train, but it takes a lot. I mean, she is the first young person we've trained to this level, but she's not the last. There will be more. But it takes an enormous investment in time, energy, and money to do that. So it's not easy to do. So, you know, but this time next year, there'll be another. That's how slow the process is. But then you'll have four people that'll help change the planet. What we're talking about, Greg, is literally redirecting an entire civilization. In a sense, taking down a planet. And how often can a small group of people have a chance to do that? It's not like a superpower is trying to invade a country. A small group of people are trying to change the way others think. When you look at past things that have happened with Buddha, Jesus, and so on, it's been small groups that have eventually had, individuals and small groups, that have had huge impacts on the way civilizations think. That's how I think of Princess's role. Small person, big impact.
Yeah, well, I mean, as a species, we're either going to crash or crash through, as they say in Mad Max. But this concept of disruptors is really key here. And I think that RV playing its part in the...
It's a disruptor science. It's a disruptor science. That's what it is.
Exactly. But the overall... This is stuff that people intuitively understand, even in their dreams, you know, or in their subconscious, that the non-material... the non-local, the mind beyond the body, everything that you can wrap up in that, which is probably most of what there is, the people's waking to that is the ultimate disruptor, because that changes everything about how we think of ourselves, about the planet, about the solar system, about the universe, about life, death, and everything, and creation itself. That's the game changer. And suddenly all of this nonsense, all of these... And you talk about the old generation. I mean, look at people like Brzezinski and Kissinger and Soros and Rockefeller and all these, you know, weak and aging demons. You know, even they, there's only so much life extension technology can keep them creaking around after their fourth heart transplant or whatever. These people have...
Actually, you know, all those old people, I really love them in their own way. They did the best that they could in their time. That's the best that they could think about. But now to move forward, we have to integrate. We're polarization, good versus bad, us versus them. That was the dominant way of thinking. They aren't going to change that. That's the way they think. That's the way they're going to continue to think. So these people, you know, they did what they thought was the right thing to do at that time. It's just no longer the right way to go. And so it does simply require new people with new ideas.
Yes, and handing over the baton when you still have your power, you know, enough, when you still have the power to go on in a way, if you see what I mean, you know, not whenever you fall face down dead and someone has to pick the baton from your dead hands. It's like in the Godfather, you know, when Vito says to Michael, oh, you know, I always thought one day it would have been Senator Corleone, you know, whatever it happens to be. And Michael says, we'll get there, Pop. We'll get there. And he hands it over to him, knowing that this guy is now ready to go and I cannot go on forever. And I think a lot of people, the aforementioned people I was talking about, you said they did the best in their time. But I sometimes wonder if they know or if they don't know when it was time to give up.
I mean, again, everything changes daily. Like, and change is good. And there's a lot of older people, the ones that did the best in their time, that don't necessarily understand that. And like Courtney was saying about the young people needing a new voice, they want someone to speak for them, to hear for them, to teach them the way they understand, not the way our grandparents or great grandparents understood. It's two completely different things. And to hear all these people that you both mentioned that I have no clue who they are, but I can see what they've done, you know, because my family knows about them, and Courtney is very enlightening, and he teaches me about these people, and to see what they've done and how we can take what they've done and flip it to where the people that are about to run this world can understand it better, because like you both said, we have been lied to, we have been undertaught, we don't have the knowledge that we need to keep the country and keep the world going in the way that it needs to go versus all the opposition that is actually there. And I think that everything that is being said today is extremely important and needed. And I hope that young people across the nation is hearing this and ready to take that fight and learn and grow and teach and get ready to fight for what we have left.
You know, Greg, this is a good example for this type of thing. I was in one of my university classes, and I just asked how many of the students, full class, had seen a Lady Gaga video. 80% of them raised their hand and said they had never seen a Lady Gaga video. Now, Lady Gaga has not done a lot of stuff recently, but it's not that much historical. I mean, we're talking a few years. So, you know, the reality is, in today's internet age, where the news is like what happened in the last 5 minutes, the new way of receiving news is very myopic in the sense that it's really only current stuff that people are really gripping hold of. And so what you have to understand is that the current audience doesn't have an extensive view of history. So when you talk about Kissinger or other people in the past, Churchill, whatever, they get at that in a history book. But like, you may have lived through Kissinger. I may have lived through Kissinger. We may have lived through Nixon, so on. But the people in college today, they weren't even born during that time period. And, you know, 80% of them may not have ever seen a Lady Gaga video. And she was big just a few years ago. So, you know, what we're talking about is a reinvention of what it means to be a contemporary human being in the internet age, where information is so fast and there's so much of it that comes at you all at once. There's only so much time that people have to focus on stuff, and with so much information blasting at them over the internet, it's, you know, they don't really have enough time to, unless they're taking history classes, to get this extensive background. So, to come out with a new science like remote viewing, you have to hit them where they're looking right now. You can't say, let's publish a book. This is a true fact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a professor at a major university. We get tenure and promotion based on publications. We write books. Those books are printed by university presses and sold in classrooms and libraries and things like that. The libraries, in a cost-cutting measure, this is all university libraries in the United States. They have an association. They took a survey. They wanted to know how to spend their money. So they did a survey and found out that 80% of all books purchased by university libraries, which are almost entirely written by professors in the academy, 80% of those books are never checked out even once. That's,
wow.
Do you realize that, Greg? The entire academic setting, the books that they're publishing, and everything, nobody's reading them. The only people who are buying them are libraries, and when they get to the libraries, they're not being checked out. So really what we're talking about is a different way that information is getting to people. And it's not that the current generation is bad. It's just that it's changed. It's not like it used to be with these. And it also means the relevance that people see of what's coming out of the academy. There's a problem. It's just a very serious problem in the academy and in universities of what they're doing. Are they doing something that's really relevant to the world? And so when you have something like a disruptor science, like remote viewing, a science that's not accepted within the mainstream, but clearly having results being done under scientific conditions, that clearly says that the mainstream paradigms of psychology, physics, even social sciences is simply not correct and needs to be adapted, needs to be changed, fundamentally altered. That type of thing, we're dealing with an audience that's ready for it, but that type of thing is simply not being handled through any mainstream outlets. So shows like yours are absolutely crucial. And new people learning how to do this are going to be needed to carry on the fight.
It's definitely true, everything that he just said. And luckily, my grandmother instilled in me to read everything. So I'm kind of getting new to the whole internet thing. But we don't check out books. We'll go straight to Google. We'll go straight to YouTube. We'll go straight to, and even everybody, it's not just the younger generation. This is everybody now. Everyone goes straight to these things, to what's in their hand on their phone, to what is on the computer. And these books are being just, they're just collecting dust. And so he's definitely right about the way that everything is going and how we do have to transition with it, with this science, the something that is not mainstream. How do we get people who haven't seen the Lady Gaga video, who are in the generation of Lady Gaga, how do we get them to see this, what's way more important, that is not on the mainstream, that is not in media every single day, that is not changing every 5 seconds, like you said, with Twitter or with Facebook or with Instagram or all these other social medias that I am still learning about today. And how do you do it? And this is the way to do it. And I feel like we're all, I guess we'll say, attacking this properly to the best of our ability to get it out there, what remote viewing is, how it can help each and every one of us, how it can connect each and every one of us to ourselves and to each other, and what it's going to do for us and what it has already done for us. And it needs to be seen, and we're doing everything in our power to get that out there with everything that Courtney has said today.
There's a very good point there, Princess, with regard to focusing on what's important. You mentioned some of the names that Courtney and I wheeled out, and you were saying, look, I have no idea who these people are. And there's a saying that I learned when I was growing up, which is today's news is tomorrow's fish and chip wrapper. And that, that comes from the idea that in this country anyway, if you bought fish and chips back in the 70s anyway, they wouldn't do it now for health and safety reasons, but they would wrap them up in yesterday's newspaper. So that strangely was kind of presaging the internet in a way, because not only is there so much more information now, but it's so much more disposable. And I know, Courtney, when we did the Hitler documentary based on your RV project, that I was talking about the need to move on and to forget certain things, but just to transcend them. And the idea that Princess has no idea who some of these people are, there will be some of the older generation who are steeped in this and who can see the steps of the processes through the decades and the generations of how we got where we are today, and say it's very important that we remember this, that, and the other thing. But in one sense, we have to keep moving. And if we think back over the millennia, the great swathes of human history, there have been times when almost everything has been wiped out, and with things like maybe the Library of Alexandria, that might have been a complete disaster. But here we are, We recovered from that, and who knows what we lost. So it's not that we just want to be in a position where we are completely ignorant of history, but I think we can focus too much a little bit on the on personalities, on particular events, and think, especially when what we're looking at is not just going forward with same old, you know, more of what went before. We're trying to actually have a new paradigm. And when that new paradigm arrives, 99% of what went before just won't matter anymore.
You know, Greg, the current project, Martin Luther King, is relevant to this discussion, especially because Martin Luther King died in the 1960s. There's a huge gap of people, even among people of color, the new younger people that really don't know much about him, that he was a big person. Yes, he was sort of in history. Yes. But a lot of people both white and black, brown, everything in between, they don't really know that much about him. Same with John Kennedy. There's a lot of people that are sort of big in our history that are sort of, so they know that Martin Luther King did something and he was assassinated and there was some type of controversy, but that's about it. They don't have ready access to sort of the details of whatever happened. So our project on Martin Luther King really fits right into this discussion because it literally brings back something of history that is very relevant to today's day and age. We're still fighting the same problems that Martin Luther King was trying to resolve back then. This is something that actually Princess makes a point that she makes in the video, in the documentary on Martin Luther King, that, you know, we're still doing the same things. And we're, so the message of Martin Luther King, which is really not very well understood, is still here with us. And it's very relevant to today's day and age. I mean, we have a big movement in the United States called Black Lives Matter because so many people of color are having some same types of problems with the authorities. And in many cities, 50% or more of African-American men don't exist anymore. I mean, they're either in prison or dead. And so you have a whole situation where there's tremendous amounts of gaps in our understanding. White people not understanding what African-Americans are going, African-Americans not understanding what whites are doing. Then we had this Hispanic influx into the United States, which is now huge, and they're in the exact same situation of the different groups not understanding them. And then we have the influx of Asians into our society and people, and this is going on worldwide. Now look what's happening in Europe with the cross-border stuff, especially with the Middle East people, the refugees coming out of Syria, you know, flocking into Europe. All of these people don't understand each other. So the message of Martin Luther King is relevant to Europe right now, right this very second, because there's nobody in history that really spoke to the issues that all of the Europeans are facing. If you look at Europe right now, the right wing is growing incredibly frighteningly. I mean, the level of polarization, you have the Islamic influence in Europe growing, but you also have the right wing in Europe growing.
Yeah.
And then you have a lot of other people splitting in the middle who normally wouldn't take sides with either side. That it's very volatile. If there has ever been a moment when people needed to understand what happened to Martin Luther King and who he was as a person,
it's now.
As Princess just said,
it's definitely now. And the reason I say that is because he just said that other cultures aren't understanding other cultures, but our culture doesn't understand ourselves. We are just now, which is why this movement, Black Lives Matter, is coming about. We're just now starting to understand who we are and where we really do come from and what we're really capable of doing, because it's been suppressed. It's been suppressed from the time we were born to the time our parents and grandparents and everybody in the African American or and even the European culture and all this has been suppressed to everybody because we don't know. We don't know the truth. And that is what this target, that's what this project was about. And I think it's very important to know the history of Martin Luther King. We all know there's a day for him. That is his birthday that we celebrate. A lot of us, a lot of African American people don't know why we celebrate it.
Yeah, which is amazing in itself, really.
Yes. And children don't know. They think it's a free day of school. They think it's a free day of no work. They think it's, and they're not understanding. And it's just like that with Veterans Day too. We are not understanding. I'm going to say we as a whole in the world are not understanding the history of what really and truly is about who we really and truly are and where we really come from. And I think doing the Martin Luther King Project unknowingly, not even knowing that that's what I was doing at the particular time, it made me emotional just being there, not even knowing that this was Martin Luther King until I finished the Target and until I finished the project and the video. And Courtney told me, "Do you know who that man was?" I said, "No, I don't." When he said Martin Luther King, I almost fell in tears because it's like, I knew this, but I didn't know this. It's like I knew about it. I learned about it, but I didn't understand it. They brushed on it for a quick second in February. That's about it. I didn't know truly who he was. You know, I I've met people who have marched with him. To this day, I've met someone recently who has marched with him. I've met someone who has shaken his hand. I've met someone who walked alongside of him and protested with him. And it's like, why don't we know this? Because, like Courtney said, it's still happening to this day. We're still fighting. We're still separated. We're still polarized. We're still in the same boat that we were in back in the 60s, in the same boat that we were in back in the 1800s. We're still there. And it's time for us to get out of it. It's time for us to really fight, love one another, know that not only Black Lives Matter, but all lives matter, which is another movement that we do have out here in the U.S. And know that it's up to us to change it. Everybody, it's up to everyone to change it, not just young people, but older people. It's up to people like Courtney to get this out there. People with his mindset to say, hey, listen to us. If you don't listen to me, at least listen to her.
So, Courtney, assuming that you chose the Target, was it because it was something you considered timely and useful at this point, or was there some other factor or combination of factors that led to it?
Well, you know, choosing a Target is a delicate situation because all remote viewing has to be done totally blind or doesn't work. So Princess had to be completely ignorant of it. So I had to surround her with other Targets that she had to do that had no relationship at all to this. So she had to not see it coming. I also had to not speak about it, not bring up the subject for months. And then, boom, you know, she finds out that the thing that she's been working on for the last 2 months was Martin Luther King. And I must admit, it was quite emotional, but it's emotional for a reason, because she didn't know who this person was, but she was an eyewitness because it was done blind. She didn't know who she was looking at. And when you see the video, it's uncanny how she's doing the remote viewing stuff really well. She's looking at the guy. She raises her hand and tells you how tall he is, the color of his skin. She tells you his age. And then she starts to describe him and what he's doing. I mean, it gives you goosebumps just watching the thing. And then you realize she's an eyewitness. I mean, this isn't like she's watched a movie or she's reading a book. She's there. That's what this remote viewing thing is. It's literally an eyewitness. And when you get to the scary good level, which is where she is now, you're literally watching on video, recorded live, somebody who's actually there. And so this isn't somewhere where you get an old person say, "I was there and I watched Martin Luther King and I saw him and I marched with him." It's not that. She was there then, just now, and it was recorded live on video. And so you get, and also with remote viewing, you get to do something else. She gets to go into the mind. Now, if she actually knew that she was looking at Martin Luther King, do you think she would have had the courage to go into his mind? But as far as she was concerned, this was just a Target that Courtney gave her. Doesn't know who it is. She did. In fact, the only thing I told her was a Target. She didn't know it was a person. She didn't know anything. She just said the no. She had the word Target. There was a Target. That's it. She did it, everything solo and blind, meaning I was not in the room when she did it. when Jade did the video or the paper sessions which preceded the video, she did everything blind. And so if she actually knew she was looking at Martin Luther King just inches away from his face, do you think she would have actually had the courage to dive into his mind, just like he was just a person on the street? You know, that's the glory. That's the great thing about remote viewing. The remote viewer is blind, so the remote viewer doesn't have any rules about what should or shouldn't be done. So here you get this young person, this kid, this, you know, young person. She's not a kid, but she's a young person, literally in front of Martin Luther King, literally looking at him like he's a, like he's a, like a, like an apple in the grocery store. It's about this tall, this round, just looking at it and just describing him neutrally, and said, I think I need to go into this guy's mind. And she dives into his mind, comes out with a whole psychological profile of the guy. The physical descriptions are great. The psychological stuff all matches the historical record. And then she goes into the second part where she goes into the assassination. And again, she gets the guy. She gets the protectors around him. She describes what they're wearing. Oh, correct. They were all wearing suits. She describes the clothing that he wore. And then she says, the guy's, somebody shot him now. Now look at that. He's lying on the ground. And then she traces the bullet back to who shot him. She finds the guy. She gives a spot on description. Now, mind you, that shot was taken from a long distance, from a building rather far away. One shot, boom. Fatal. It's over. You know, I'm sorry, but James Earl Ray was an escaped convict. You know, he wasn't. That shot was like from a military sniper. I mean, it was either a lucky shot or the person really knew how to shoot. Unless you're talking like top grade, one shot, down, done, you're out. So the issue of Martin Luther King being shot by a wild guy called James Earl Ray, an escaped convict who had no history of sharpshooting and had a lucky shot and then escaped and got arrested in London and extradited back to the United States. There's a lot of really weird things about that story. Anyway, so totally blind, Princess goes in, identifies the guy, describes all the you know, the surrounding ministers that were surrounding him, that were protecting him, describes all of the stuff about him, describes that he was shot. She describes that there were riots going on in the street because you know, the death triggered riots everywhere. And so she describes sort of her cities that were rioting all over the place. She connected the two events. And then she traces the bullet back to the guy, describes the guy, and then finds that he's working in a group of five people. And that there's a big guy on the top who got his orders from somebody else. And she goes back and she pursues that guy and finds some guy in a suit that looks like a government type person. I mean, she gets the whole layout of the story, and that's remote viewing. That's classic. It's not just being able to see something, but being able to pursue a target. So you see something, then you say, that's weird. And then you follow it through and find, well, what does that connect us to? And you end up following it through. And when you end up connecting all these dots, what you get is a huge story that all makes sense given what we know actually happened. And it was recorded live so that you actually see her discover it on video. And she does it in a very engaging manner. So it's like you're on the edge of your seat when you're doing that. So it not only introduces people to what Martin Luther King was as a person, but who he was as a person as well. The soul, the inner stuff, and also the story, what really happened. If it wasn't all done in such squeaky clean scientific conditions, blind, you could dismiss it. But given the fact that it was done under such controls, and that's how all we do, that's what we do at Farsight, with all the controls put in. This stuff is very, very persuasive when you actually see it. So this is very different from the old science days, where scientists used to do things in their lab and then say, you know, well, trust me, those are the results. That's what we got. That's it. This is now a video age where if you want to show people something, don't just tell them what the story is. Oh, by the way, Martin Luther King, he was died by a conspiracy. There was a group. Don't do that. Show it on video. Meaning, we now have remote viewers who can do it. The idea of doing paper and pen sessions where you have to believe what's on a piece of paper, that's out. Now you get to see the remote viewer live on video actually do it right then and there and discover it for the first time. Boy, it's really powerful. Well, you saw it, Greg. I mean, it's very...
Yeah, of course. And one of the questions that I continue to get put to me, and I'm sure you do endlessly, Courtney, 1,000 times more than me, is, well, we watched a remote viewing session, you know, live. The viewer is speaking about or drawing or writing what they're seeing, they could just be making it up. Well, that is true, but in that case, everybody across the world could all set themselves up, say they're remote viewers, and just come out with any gobbledygook. The point is, how does the remote viewing data compare with what we already know? And crucially, and this is very important, as time goes forward, how does remote viewing data square up with what later emerges that was not known at the time, if you see what I mean? So for all the sessions and projects you've ever done, as time goes forward and new information emerges, it's then able to go, okay, well, what do we now know in the 3D physical realm that actually remote viewing or some other methodology revealed to us quite a while ago?
Yeah, actually, there's two elements to that. The element is there's always two types of remote viewing data. The first are verifiable. That means stuff that we actually know about the target, and we have to see if the remote viewer comes back with that information that's accurate. So the fact that she got a brown-skinned man about so high, that age, doing this, making a speech in Washington, the Guy Have a Dream speech, and then being shot, all the stuff with the people surrounding him, perfect descriptors of the group, the person, scenes, setting, environment, the urban environment, perfect descriptors of all of that, that's all verifiable. So at that point, she then starts noticing things that we don't yet know, which is, you know, how he actually died with regard to the assassination. And that stuff then becomes very believable. And so what it does is it leads regular, normal forensic people to say, well, now we have more to go on. So based on this information, you can then have regular forensic people sort of follow the breadcrumbs and look for, now that the remote viewing data is in, now we can, now people who are interested in sort of pursuing this on a forensic level or actually on an investigative level, even within the government, they can say, okay, now we're looking for five people. Who were the group? And they can start tracing things like that down, and that there might have been a government connection. Okay, who might that have been? And then sort of, there are people who know these things, but unless you know enough to ask the right questions, the questions never get asked. And that's where the remote viewing sort of comes in. It tells you what actually happened, and then you can say, okay, then from that, I can come up with the right questions, and I know what to pursue. And then you can look for physical evidence, testimonies, and other things to sort of corroborate that. So that's where this stuff comes in that you're talking about, to sort of get the new information corroborated with new physical discoveries. If you don't know that new stuff with the remote viewing stuff, you don't know what to ask, and the physical discoveries never get made. So anyway, that's...
Well, in a session, if a viewer... I've certainly talked to you about some of the projects you've overseen, and a viewer will describe a person's facial characteristics, for example. I remember in the JFK one, there was a physical description. I can't remember if it was Dick or Daz or some combination of the two, described a character. And later it was along the lines of what you've just mentioned. It was like, well, hang on a minute here. Could this have been J. Edgar Hoover? You know, can't prove anything, but it gives you maybe a line of investigation, a line of speculation, further speculation. If a viewer is dealing with someone in a session that they, in their normal waking life, if I can put it that way, that they actually recognize, for example, like Martin Luther King, if you were then viewing Martin Luther King then and there, what prevents the viewer from saying, hang on a minute, this is Martin Luther King?
Yeah, everything's done so blind that you're taught as part of the training not to make those conclusions. So during this session, Princess can actually talk about that. She knew she was dealing with some type of major black leader. For a long time, she thought, she was asking
I
if this
was Malcolm X.
Yeah, actually, let Princess talk about that.
it's definitely blind doing this. I had no idea looking at, and again, me personally, I've never really fully seen Martin Luther King. So I can't make that distinction. I just see color, and you don't see a full picture. You see maybe certain features, like, oh, his nose is a little different than mine. You know, you'll notice that, or, you know, his nose is pointy, or there's something different about his face. If it's a character face, but with this guy, he looks like a normal black guy, but you can't see the full on you know how we all know he has a thick cheeks, chunky cheeks with the widespread nose and the mustache and goatee. We don't see that to that extent. We can tell he's got some facial hair, but you don't necessarily see the full picture as though I'm looking at this picture right now. And again, he does teach us not to jump to conclusions. So like if it's a building, I naturally just say structure because I can't say that it's a building because it might be a boat and I don't know. And so it'll stop you from jumping to conclusions that could lead you to saying something completely wrong. You just say the basic things. And I just pretty much said the basic things. And they're more feelings than visions. Every remote viewer is different. I definitely admire Dick and Dad's because they can see things that I can't. And I look at their things when we do the same projects and I'm like, why didn't I see that? But I'm a feeler. Mine is more so in the feeling of the perception versus a visual picture. So everybody's a little different. And again, I knew he was a profound leader. I naturally did not think Martin Luther King because I thought it was too obvious. I was like, no, it's too obvious. I said, but this guy, I said, he has a Malcolm X type of feeling. And if you look at my paper session, I think I actually wrote that down. But you just never know. You never know with anything. I could have been remote viewing my mom and not even known.
Well, hopefully it wouldn't have been your mom with some facial hair, but yeah. the whole scenario, Courtney, really, was when it emerged, you know, obviously me with the benefit of knowing what the target was, it was kind of like, oh, here we go. It's the familiar MO with regards to the assassination. And as you say, nothing proved, but all the pointers leading towards perhaps new ways of investigating for physical evidence. And it was just the way of doing things at that time, wasn't it? We discussed with the JFK project, for example, how things have somewhat changed. Now, there's different ways of assassinating people without killing them. But, I mean, some of the incredible stuff that people were being asked to swallow back then about the MLK assassination. And it was like, you know, it was the, okay, JFK hadn't happened yet, you know, that assassination. But it was sort of the, you know, it was almost like the passports being left behind on 9/11. It was like, okay, so this one shot, one expert shot to the head, and then the shooter leaves behind a load of stuff with his fingerprints on it. It's like, of course, you know, I referenced in the JFK discussion that we did the film, well, based on the book by Frederick Forsyth, Day of the Jackal. And that's a very good forensic breakdown of how a professional assassinate operates. And the clinical precision beyond anything. I mean, thinking about things, Courtney and Princess, that you and I would never think of in order to cover their tracks. You know, a level of resourcefulness beyond, it's just superhuman. And yet each one of these cases, we're being asked to believe that someone is an expert shot. But no, actually they're not. They, you know, they go duck hunting, or in James Earl Ray's case, he's an armed robber. He just goes into liquor stores blasting. And yet he's capable of this. You know,
we have a consistent pattern in the 1960s, especially the idea of assassination and telling the public anything and the media buying it and saying whatever, they just repeating it. That consistently happened even through the 9/11 stuff. So when the mainstream, when the government and the mainstream media are told, you know, when they say something, everybody kicks in the gear and says, oh yes, that's it. But, you know, assassinations, leadership assassinations, they generally don't happen today. They have found that if there's a decision on the upper ups to get rid of somebody, it's easier now to discredit them. Because if you look at it with JFK and Martin Luther King as examples, we're still talking about them. They became martyrs, and the evidence eventually still comes out. So if you deal with it on a level of discreditation, when you involve them in some scandal, that kills them more thoroughly than physical killing them. And so the easier way to get rid of people today is to discredit them in some way, involve them in some scandal, make it very noisy, make it very big. And most people will just look at it and walk away from where there's noise. Most people say where there's smoke, there's fire, and that's the end of it. So that's safer to do than physically killing them, because if physically killing them, people eventually, the truth eventually comes out with these things. It's hard to sort of hide that stuff forever. But in both of those cases, JFK and Martin Luther King, you had uncanny accuracy from very improbable sources. And we already did a show on the JFK thing, so we don't need to renew that. But with what the people were told afterwards is that Lee Harvey Oswald, who had no history of accurate shooting, fired a rifle that the government's own forensic people, own investigative people, said to the Warren Commission, actually said to the commission itself that the rifle was broken, the sighting thing didn't work properly. They tried to repair it with shims, and they still couldn't. It was old, it was dirty, it was gunky. And whoever did shoot JFK shot with incredible accuracy, and marksmen take care of their weapons. They never would have shot a gun like that. And the evidence on the film, the Magruder film, was that he was shot from multiple directions. And trained assassins triangulate, and they have usually three different positions that they shoot from. And they're all like super marksmen. And the physical evidence indicate the bullets came at least from two directions. And the remote viewing evidence said that there's very clearly three different teams in different locations that have been. That's how things are normally set up. Those are messy because they have lots of physical evidence of it that's connected, and the people then, there's lots of stuff that can be discovered. Too many people know about it. You discredit somebody and all that goes away. So with Martin Luther King, they used one person to pull the trigger. But again, you get this crazy story that escaped convict with no history of shooting could have tracked him, followed him, set it up from a hotel room, shoot from a long distance and from a location far away, and make a perfect shot, and then get away and get to London. I mean, James Earl Ray initially confessed, but you don't know what type of pressure he was put under. But then he recanted immediately, like just very soon after that, and said, didn't do that. And that was never pursued by the government. So
you have to wonder, though, don't you? Because he lived a long time and didn't die until 1998. And yeah, you have to wonder if maybe someone at the top behind the scenes in Black Ops didn't feel that they needed to learn something from that, because he carried on trying to clear his name throughout his life.
Yeah, he tried for the rest of his life to clear his name on this thing. All I can say is that from a remote viewing perspective, we don't have anything that looks like it was done by James Earl Ray. The assassin, you should say, well, look, Princess described right now. What was the assassin? What was he like? Did he look like a escaped convict jerk who couldn't keep a job, or did he? What did you perceive?
It was when I first saw the shooter. It definitely wasn't a escaped convict type of person. It was more like an ex-military type of person. And I kept calling the person a sniper. And then I was like, well, I'm not supposed to give it a name, but this guy is trained. Like, and that's just all I kept saying over and over again. And you through remote viewing, if you're saying something like that, you just got to write it down. And so that's what I did. And then I kept following and tracing and realized, I was like, well, why would he do that? Why is he shooting this person? You know, well, okay, let's figure that out. And I kept going and going and going. And I realized someone told him to. And I was like, well, why are they telling me? I kept saying, well, why are they doing that? Who wants to shoot this person and why? This person doesn't seem to be a bad person. He seems terrified. And I just kept following and following and following until I realized there were so many people involved in this. And they all were, you know, suit and tie type of guys, uniform, the type of people you just don't want to mess with, the type of people that, you know, like me, I'd probably raise my hand before asking a question to. And they didn't seem any type of untrained. They seemed very, I said CIA like, but bad, like bad spies type of people. And it definitely wasn't a redneck hillbilly guy. It definitely wasn't an ex-convict. it didn't feel like they were scared of anything. Most ex-convicts would have some sense of fear, or they would have some sense of regret, or maybe, like, maybe I should run now. But I didn't feel that from any of those people. It was more like, the job's done. I can go get some food now.
Maybe Princess could also comment on, she asked in the video, she actually said, you know, why do they want this guy dead? She actually said those exact words. You could see her thinking, like you could see her like deep, just looking into her eyes, and she says it. And then she talks something about like, there was a stirrup. Princess, do you want to talk about the stirrup concept?
Yeah, I was very curious as to why, when I realized so many people sent one guy to shoot one person, I was like, well, why? And I kept focusing on it until I realized, I was like, he's changing something that they don't want to be changed. But what is it? I didn't know what it was. And I said, he's doing something that these people don't like, and is causing a stirrup, is causing some type of, I guess, fall or whatnot. And I kept saying that and realizing that in words just started coming out, like, you know, change or he's trying to change something that is not the way it should be, that these people want to keep that way. And that's why they're trying to shoot him. And whenever it was discovered that it was Martin Luther King, it like, ding, the light went off. And it's like, that makes so much sense. You know, he was defying the government. He was defying what was said to be right by staying segregated. And he was saying, no, don't do that. Follow what you feel is right. It shouldn't be about color. It shouldn't be about who you are. It shouldn't be about man or woman. It should be just us all living and merging together. And I can see why in that timing, these people are like, oh no, this guy has got to go.
Princess, can I ask you a question? With you being of the generation that you are, how aware, if at all, were you that there was a time when significant figures would be gunned down in public, and the public would be told that apparently Laurel and Hardy did it, and they then sent in the Keystone Cops to investigate, and we're all just supposed to be happy with that, suck it up and shut up?
I'm very aware of it. I was raised by my grandmother, and she's the type of woman that will definitely say, you need to pay attention to the news, you need to read the newspaper, you need to follow this, that, and the third. And so I did. I was very obedient. And so what she taught me, every time what she went through, because she was in that time when these things were happening, she instilled it into me to where I could listen and understand it when it's being taught or seen. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I've never understood why the government would just say that, or, I mean, why say anything at all instead of leaving it be if you're going to be the person to make these bad things happen? I've never understood that. And I believe that it's still happening to this day, with a lot of things, with a lot of the shootings that are happening in the U.S., with a lot of the, even 9/11, you know, why did you tell us one thing when you know it's another? Why can't you just tell us the truth?
Don't you got any thoughts on what's just been said, Courtney?
Well, you know, we're talking about changing the way a whole planet works. The most important element for how we govern ourselves today is through secrecy. If you look at how all elements of governance, it's, you know, they have certain things that they will release to the public that are sanitized, and then things that they hold in. But if you look at how the Federal Reserve Board makes its decisions on the economy, interest rates, secrecy. Congressional committee hearings, behind closed doors, secrecy. Presidential stuff, you know, they do everything behind closed doors, and then eventually have a press conference, which is the canned version of what they think people should actually hear. So we govern ourselves by secrecy. That's how it works. And what we're talking about is a future where we don't govern ourselves by secrecy, where we have an end to secrets. And that is the biggest change that's going to happen. Because we really can't move into the future as a species without going through that door of the end of secrecy. Because every time you govern on the basis of secrecy, every single time, you're going to have individuals at the top and the elite making decisions that are in their self-interest, that are not in the self-interest of the public, and they're going to say that they think the public would be better served if they didn't know this stuff. And then there's going to be other elite who are going to say, we can get away with anything, and the end result would be XYZ. So the public will be happy with the XYZ. We can tell them anything in terms of how to get there. So the 9/11 stuff, which was really big, you know, we won't have to go through the 9/11 project again, but the idea that they needed a major event to kick the United States into a war to go after Iraqi oil, that traces back a long time, going back to Bismarck, for example, with the Elm Telegram, King Wilhelm actually sent a rather conciliatory telegram to Napoleon. That was Napoleon III, not Napoleon Bonaparte, but his nephew, who was then ruling France. This is back in the 1800s, to saying, don't worry, we can get along, and I won't mess with other things in Europe. Like, he was trying to replace the King of Spain with his nephew, with his relative. And so it was basically a conciliatory thing. And Bismarck took the telegram and ripped it up and rewrote it and sent a fake telegram to Napoleon that essentially gave Napoleon the bird, saying, blankety blank you, we're going to do whatever we want. You can go to hell. Napoleon was ticked, and he launched a war. And that's exactly what Bismarck wanted, because he wanted the rest of the Germanic-speaking people to feel aggrieved that they were being invaded by a foreign power, and they didn't do anything. And that indeed united the Germanic-speaking people. They formed a country. They had a congress. They formed a country. That's how you have Germany today. And they bought, with all that power, psychological, psychic power, they managed to muster themselves, to organize themselves, to defeat Napoleon. And in 1871, they captured Paris, and totally defeating him. So World War II, when Roosevelt met with Churchill on a battleship in the North Atlantic, Churchill was begging him to intervene, to enter the war, and Roosevelt said, no, we can't enter the war now, because I would enter the war the way Woodrow Wilson entered World War I, with the divided American public. We have to wait. There's going to be an incident in the Pacific, and we have to wait for that incident in the Pacific to happen, and then that will wipe out all the isolationists, the negative people, the people who are wanting us not to get invading, not to get involved in the war in Europe. That'll wipe them all out publicly, and then allow us to enter the war with a united voice. So he converted the economy to a wartime economy in order to send to Britain supplies so that we would be physically capable of entering the war, while he waited for the incident in the Pacific. Now, you know, people can say, Courtney, now you're saying that Roosevelt was complicit in the bombing of Pearl Harbor. I'm not saying that. This is Turner Catledge, former editor-in-chief of the New York Times, and you can hear him talk about it on live on video. Actually, it was interviews on video and two videos that you can see on YouTube. In fact, now Hail to the Chief and Manipulator-in-Chief, documentaries hosted by Henry Fonda. For people who know, this is how you get people to go to war. You have an incident. And then we had the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which is turned out to be, there was a very minor incident at the Gulf of Tonkin with a North Vietnamese torpedo boat that did not damage the SS Maddox destroyer at all. And then 2 days later, there was another incident which didn't happen even at all. It was totally fraudulent. It was told to Congress by Lyndon Baines Johnson, the president, that these both incidents happened, they were grievous, and that we needed to defend ourselves. And then they passed the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution. Now, the fact that the first incident was minor, producing no damage to the SS Maddox, and that the second incident didn't happen even at all, is not in dispute. It's not in historical dispute. The only thing that is in historical dispute is whether LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, knew he was lying to Congress when he was lying to Congress. But that's the only thing that's in dispute. So, you know, and then when we get to 9/11, eventually when you govern yourself by secrecy, eventually people will say, we can get away with it. We'll have it so it looks like these crazy pilots from Al-Qaeda did all of this. These pilots who were just trainees, they were flying,
like Cessna or something.
Cessna 172s and simulators and stuff like that. And when you look at the flying that was done by those ships, those airliners, that was way better than Top Gun type flying. I mean, and there's a whole bunch of stuff with 9/11, like Building 7 collapsed and they said it was an office furniture fire. In the whole history of all of modern architecture, there has never been a fire that collapsed a building like that. That was clearly a controlled demolition. And those things had to be set weeks in advance. You can't bring down Building 7 of the World Trade Center with demolition charges that you plant on that very moment. While the Twin Towers are burning and collapsing, you can't do that kind of stuff and then, you know, set the demolition charges and bring it down. Those charges had to be set long in advance. So, you know, there's so much stuff that the remote viewing process, when done by scary good viewers under highly controlled experimental designs that are totally done blind, can be very, very, very persuasive. And the question you have to then ask is what we find, does it match the facts on the ground, the verifiable stuff? And then does it match what we know physically better than the official story that was given by the government, told to the press, and reported? And in all of the projects that we have, that is always in the affirmative, meaning you have a government, you have something that happened, then you have a remote viewing study. And then the question is, you have a story from the government and you have a story from the remote viewing. Which story matches the facts on the ground? Now, if it was just people just dreaming up conspiracy things and just doing it, that's one thing. But when you have these data collected by multiple remote viewers who are the best in the world, and then those remote viewers come in with data, remote viewing data, that is highly explicit, extremely detailed, and matches the facts on the ground, whereas the official story is simply bonkers with respect to the facts on the ground, then you have to say, well, then these remote viewing data really do help us advance. Now, I've always said the remote viewing data by themselves can't prove anything. And that's the same as a court case. When you go to a court case, what you do is you amass evidence, you bring evidence, and then the jury looks at all the evidence that's brought in, and then decides which is the most likely. So you're not proving that somebody was guilty. What you're doing is you're building a case, and then you'd make a decision based on all the evidence. So remote viewing is an example of an eyewitness type of testimony. Now, eyewitnesses in a court case, those eyewitnesses are not fail-proof. I mean, there are zillions of people in prisons today based on eyewitness testimony that has been turned definitively to be wrong. Lots of people have been sent to death in the death chambers because, you know, eyewitness testimony turned out to be wrong. We know that because there's lots of people who are on death row that were waiting execution, especially here in the United States, that were rescued at the last moment by DNA evidence that indicated that they were totally innocent and then released. And then the official thing is, oh, we're so sorry. But they lost 20 years of their life while they were waiting on death row. So imagine how many of the people waited it out and then got killed, meaning the DNA evidence didn't come in fast enough, because it takes a long time for the DNA evidence to finally, you have to go through court cases to push for the DNA testing, and finally they test it reluctantly, and then they say, oh my gosh, oh, I'm so sorry. So for those lucky ones that had the testing done, we have hundreds and hundreds of cases in the United States where people have been released from prison with the apology. Oh, I'm so sorry. But think of all the people we haven't released and who went to death row and that because the DNA testing was never done, all based on eyewitnesses. So physical eyewitnesses aren't perfect either. So the thing is, you have to build a case. You build a case with physical eyewitnesses. You build a case with data that you forensic data that you pick up. And then you build a case with remote viewing data. And the remote viewing data is so good because what you do is you use the remote viewing data to help the physical, forensic people search for the physical clues they need that can build a case. Without the remote viewing data, you don't even know what to ask. You don't even know if it's a good lead to follow. But when you see the remote viewing data fill out the entire story with all the details, you sort of know in your heart whether it's likely to prove valuable. So then you invest the time and energy to pursue it.
Okay, Courtney. Well, just a final thought for today, especially as we have Princess here and we've been talking about the new generation. Do you think, or is it your understanding that it's possible that as remote viewing could, and perhaps other psi phenomena could spread amongst more of the population, that its learning could accelerate? I mean, I'm adapting this from some other ideas about how things grow and proliferate, but it's just a speculation on my mind. I'm just wondering, or does it not operate like that? I'm just wondering if there is not quite 100th monkey syndrome, but, you know, maybe if there was some way in a community, say, of 1,000 people, if one person could do it and then 10 people could do it and then 100, you know, would that accelerate? Is that even possible?
Well, yes and no. And the level of basic remote viewing experiences, absolutely. Princess will eventually be teaching at the Institute. And so the people will be able to take courses physically, but we also have free instructional material, including over 20-hour course hosted by YouTube on our website at www.farsight.org, and like seeing far, farsight.org. And, you know, so instruction is good, and there is the idea that more people will do it, but there's a difference, Greg. It's true that we want billions of people to try it out and to verify that in fact it can be done. We want it to spread into the university system, the high school system, so that people accept that in fact our current laws of physics are not complete, that significant changes need to be understood to our understanding of physical and non-physical reality. And then to understand the physics behind that. And we need to also understand that remote viewing is like playing the piano or any musical instrument. Princess plays a violin, for example. Anybody can make noise. I can go to a piano and bang away, but I can't play the piano like my son can play the piano. I can't play the violin like Princess can play the violin. If you want to go see really great pianists, if you want to see Lang Lang and hear Lang Lang play, you go to Carnegie Hall and listen to him play. And so the point is, there will always be billions of people who want to learn remote viewing, enough to touch it, feel it, to get an understanding. Yes, it works. But there's always going to be a need to have those people, those few who are scary good, at the Princess level, at the Dick Allgaier level, at the Daz Smith level, the scary good remote viewers. And it's just like musicians. Everybody takes music lessons. But how many go on to be like Lang Lang to perform in Carnegie Hall? So yes, there is this idea that there will be billions who will experience remote viewing, understand it's there, the instructional material is there. There'll be people who want to go further and take actual physical courses. And then there will be a few people, just like with musicians, who will go the extra mile, who will then become spectacular. The level of Princess, Daz Smith, Dick Allgaier. And that number will grow. But it will not be in the billions. It will be in the smaller numbers. But that number will grow. And those people will help us tremendously in changing our society and helping us as a species to know what is possible and, indeed, to survive as a species.
Well, today, Courtney, we've been discussing the Farsight Institute's latest project with you and Princess. It's Martin Luther King Jr., The Dream, The Man, The Death. That, of course, is available currently at the Farsight website. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Really, there's only one extra thing. We are a nonprofit, and we do not spend any money on advertising. So if people could go to our website, and first thing to do when you get there is on the upper left-hand corner, you'll see everyone on every webpage. Click on that, subscribe to our free newsletter. We send them out relatively rarely every few weeks just to let people know what we're doing. So that's the only way we really have to connect with people. So when you go to see our projects, please actually watch our projects. Watch the remote viewing done live. See the premium projects that have you at the edge of your seat when you're doing it. But in the process, just click on your email, click on the subscribe to the newsletter, put in your email, and you're done. We never give out the email addresses to anyone for any reason whatsoever, period. And we very rarely send out, only sometimes every week, sometimes every few weeks, send out a newsletter just to let people know what we're doing. That's the only way you really sort of keep in. So if you can sign up for the newsletter, that's a great thing. Farsight.org, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T, like seeing far.org, O-R-G.
Well, Courtney, once again, and Princess, for the first, I hope not the last time, thank you for joining us today on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you, Greg. You're a great host, and I'm really always happy to be invited back to your show.
Well, folks, that's it for another week. As ever, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, check out the website, which is LegalizeFreedom.com. That's Legalize-Freedom.com. Where you'll find an archive of programs offering alternative views on a wide range of topics including politics and economics, energy and environment, culture, spirituality, history, and the nature of reality. You can also browse and buy a range of publications from our guests, and if you're feeling generous, make a donation to help keep the site up and running. Whether you listen, donate, or do both, I greatly appreciate your support. Until next time, I'm Greg Moffat, and you've been listening to LegalizeFreedom.com.